Want to expand the influence of design? Pragmatic Institute offers interactive, actionable courses for designers who are looking to contribute more strategically in their organizations. Explore our offerings such as Business Strategy and Design and Influence Through Storytelling at pragmaticinstitute.com/design.
And welcome to Design Chats, a podcast from Pragmatic Institute, where we sit down with design leaders, practitioners, and alumni to discuss how to grow the strategic impact of design. I am Rebecca Caligeris, Vice President of Marketing and Product Strategy at Pragmatic Institute. And today I am very happy to introduce Teresa Brazen. Teresa has spent 15 years or more working in the design industry as a design consultant, educator, business leader, executive coach. She's helped lots of names and companies that you would know, NASA, Cisco, Clorox, Charles Schwab, just to name a few. And now, like, her mission is to help professionals expand their potential and increase their impact. And one of the ways she does that is an instructor here at Pragmatic. So we're super excited to have you, Teresa. Welcome to Design Chats.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Just to help everyone who's not had the privilege of speaking with you before understand a little bit more, can you share a little bit about your journey in the design industry as a business leader and educator?
Yeah. So as you said, I entered this field 15 plus years ago. I actually had a life as a visual artist and worked in the nonprofit field before that. And I actually ended up in design because I was at a shift moment in my career where I had been a working artist and I decided I didn't want to do that anymore. But I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew the kind of environment that I wanted to work in. And I knew I wanted it to be creative, kind of flat, not super hierarchical, someplace I could get my hands dirty. And I would talk about that with people as I was exploring what I wanted to do next. And I ended up talking with someone who said, hey, you are describing what sounds like a place that I know. And they introduced me to a design agency called Adaptive Path. And I ended up getting a job there. And that sort of began my foray into design. So it really began with what kind of place I wanted to work in. And then interestingly, you know, I ended up in a field that actually was a great marrying of the things that I had done before: creativity, caring about human beings and how they are impacted. So it stuck as a field. So I worked there for about 4 years and was in program management. So I got to work both with clients and with teams. And I think the really great thing about Adaptive Path was that because it was a very flat organization, I got to be involved in a lot. So I got to do ideation with the teams and research with the teams and really got my hands in it. And after that, I ended up moving over to another design firm, Cooper, ended up working in design education and, you know, learned everything I know really about facilitation and learning design there, really on the job. And ended up running that line of business. And then our organization was acquired. Then I scaled it to 10 countries. So all the design studios, or many of the design studios around the world. And that was an incredible experience in helping, well, actually sort of igniting a movement, because I couldn't just tell people this is what you had to do. I actually had to inspire them to be interested in it as a line of business that they could offer through their studios too. And so I learned a lot about influence and persuasion, which is, you know, some of what I teach through Pragmatic too. And anyway, so scaled it, did all of that. And then I ended up moving into coaching after that. And it's been a really, I think, just a nice evolution of, you know, everything that I've done to date. So I teach with you all and I coach and I really leverage, you know, my experiences with creativity and cultivating creativity in the design world, my experiences with leadership, my experience like being a business owner and running a line of business. And so it's just, it's fun to be able to help people in so many different ways today.
Is that really what sparked your interest in coaching?
Wanting to help people? Yeah. I mean, in teaching and also in managing, one of my favorite things was just helping people grow.
Yeah.
And seeing those moments where something clicks or they try something that makes them really uncomfortable, but then they get a win and their confidence builds, or they're excited about something that's like a really new way of doing things they hadn't thought about before. So yeah, it helps me do that kind of stuff.
I think it's really, I would 100% agree. It's just really exciting to see both the light bulbs go off, but also to see people kind of grow into their promise and grow into their gifts and be able to like really start to leverage those to make a difference in their career, but also to make a difference in their own sort of fulfillment with their job, right? It's not just the impact they're making at the work, but it's internally and how much more satisfied they are. I think that's huge.
Yeah. And a lot of coaching is about the practice of becoming even more intentional about what you're creating, both like who, I would say actually about who you're being and what you're creating through who you're being.
Yeah. And I think one of those things is people, we would talk a lot today about sort of career pathing and career directories. Mm-hmm. And I think one of those things that's an important part of that is in moving forward with your career, recognizing what it is that you're good at and what it is that you like to do so that you keep those things alive in whatever career path. It may help you define what your career path should be, but it also can help you to lean into those things, even if they may not seem as if they're traditional in those spots. So I think that's super important.
I would call that finding your zone of genius.
Excellent. So I love that.
It's like the magic trifecta of something that you have some talent in or the potential, you know, in something that gives you joy and something that can make you money.
Yeah, absolutely. Talent, joy, and money.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you've seen with designers and their career directories, like moving from junior to senior level individual contributors, and even sometimes up to people leaders.
Yeah. Well, let's see. So first of all, I would say it's been interesting with the rise of design operations. There are a lot of people, or some of what I've seen is that as people become more senior in the design world, that ends up being an option that some folks are starting to consider. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense because you think about it, they've been in the trenches, they know what it takes to try to get good design through the mechanisms of an organization and out to market. And they've probably experienced a lot of pain points with lack of structure or systems or processes or learning development programs or tools. And I think, you know, some people get inspired to make that better for other people. So that's one path that I see happen. And I think that's fantastic. You know, I come from the world, the agency side. I worked in three different agencies and then an agency inside of a huge corporation. So something I've seen personally is a lot of people start out in agency world, move in-house at a point where they found the work really exciting in agency land because they get to, you know, interact with tons of different companies. They get to work on lots of different kinds of projects. But sometimes I think people get hungry to see a product or service designed from end to end. And so that then drives people to go in-house. And then after some time, some people end up moving back out, either re-interested in agency world or consulting or something like that. And I actually wonder with, you know, I was just talking about this with someone the other day with all the layoffs that have happened and all these designers that are now back out looking for work. It'll be interesting to see how many choose to go back in-house and how many decide to go start their own thing. So that's just kind of an interesting.
Yeah. But it sounds a little bit like too, like you're talking about, like there's many different paths, right? There's design ups. Let's go from being an individual contributor and moving up to senior, and then let's go and kind of think about the process in the back end. As you get more more experience is the word I'm looking for, going and moving from being in a company, going back to an agency where you feel like you can help a lot and maybe leave behind what can feel like some of the red tape. There's people management. Right? If that's a part. And then there's just one that I think sometimes people don't realize. Some people just are outstanding individual contributors.
Yes.
And they just get more and more experienced in that. And that is also that there's four good paths. They all count as success.
Yeah. And I would say to some things that I've noticed that seem like they're still missing for folks as they're evolving in their career, especially for those who want to go the route of management. I still feel like a lot of organizations are not cultivating leadership skills early enough, that it's sort of perceived as something people are taught when they're ready to move into management, as opposed to a skill set that's being developed over a period of time that they get to practice And actually, to your point about individual contributors, is also a skill set that folks who never want to go into management should be cultivating too, because they still need to influence inside their organizations.
I mean, there's absolutely a difference between leadership and management, right? I think you're talking about there's leadership skills that are really important for you to learn no matter what sort of level or stage of your career at, that may or may not make you a manager, but there's so much value when you have those and can inspire others to action.
Yes.
Belief. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, some organizations have programs to help develop leadership in people and help people who are moving into management with that. There's still an awful lot that don't. There's still an awful lot of people that become a manager with no guidance or support. They're just suddenly in that role. And I also think, you know, I've been in the position of managing teams and I know how easy it is to get caught up in, I don't know, there's a million things that you're juggling, right? But I think sometimes leaders forget to be transparent about what they're doing with their leadership for the sake of their team learning about how they are navigating the waters.
Hmm.
So it's not just about like modeling, but it's also a little bit of like, I'm going to stage this. We're trying to get something through. I'm going to stage this through three conversations with these people. Let me tell you why. I think there could be a bit more of that. I mean, like I said, I also empathize because I know when people are in those roles, they've got a lot that they're trying to juggle, but there are just a lot of ways that the leadership skills of people could be developed earlier. I also think business strategy, it's still, I mean, we've been talking in the design community about wanting to strengthen our business acumen and, you know, elevate the role of design. And I still think that business strategy is not explicitly taught early enough. So again, it's like, you know, we as Pragmatic might be called in to do training and business strategy and design. It might be perceived as something that's only for senior leaders. And I would argue that really junior folks need to be exposed to the ideas of making sure that they know what company strategy is and business strategy is and learning in small ways of how to tie their work to those things so that they can make the case for, you know, its value. I think that that isn't seen as something that people should be learning earlier. And I think it is.
Well, and I think that's super smart too, what you're talking about. Like we think of it as part of our jobs as managers to make sure that the people under us are developing the skills of their role, right? So if you know, you of course would provide them feedback on their designs and some of the best practice, like that would be a natural part of it. But I think sometimes we forget that another part of our role as leaders and managers is to build up those other skills, the business acumen and also the leadership skills. And you make a really good point that part of the way you do it is it's just like to overtly talk about it, right?
Yeah.
We are going to do this project now. And let me explain why this is one one's prioritized. And let me help you understand how the decision was made. We don't always think about it in the way that we naturally think about some of the other skills, sort of quote unquote training that we would do. And I think it's a really important thing, not only to help people kind of understand that context, but it actually ends up making you have a much stronger team, right? The more they understand those other pieces, the more they can make decisions and recommendations based on the overall piece. And so it takes a little time, but the dividends it plays in the short run and in the long run are really quite huge.
Agreed.
So I'm going to go back a little bit because I just really enjoyed the finding your zone of genius. Right. And we start talking about finding your zone of genius and talent and joy and making money all combined. And we talked about some of the different paths. So if you were to coaching someone and kind of helping them figure out what are some questions they should ask themselves, what are some things they should look at to figure out like where their zone of genius might be, help them identify what that might be.
Well, I mean, I think you laid out four really solid paths that people might consider. So one is loving doing the craft of design and really wanting to stay there. And I really want to say there is no shame in continuing to choose to focus on your craft. Like management is a very specific skill set and you need to want to do it. And what I have witnessed is that there is this inside of organizations, I think there's this pull, like everyone should want to move into management.
Yeah.
You are perceived as more valuable if you move into management. And I just completely disagree with that. And I've had my own experience of managing a team where there was someone who was an amazing individual contributor who didn't want to move into management. And I was like, thank God.
Right.
I love that you want to do your craft. And how can I help you keep growing in that craft? But, you know, I just say all of that because it is not good for anyone if you move into management just for the status or the money. You won't be a good manager, and it won't be good for the people around you, because really good managers care a lot about the craft of management. So I would say, if you're interested in that as a path, then I would encourage you to see leadership as a craft, to see it as a creative endeavor in the same way that you do design. Because really, you know, one of many things you're doing when you move into management is you are designing healthy environments for creativity to thrive, particularly in the design world or any creative field. And, you know, navigating relationships and, you know, helping to shepherd work through your organization. So yeah, I would say approaching it like a creative project or a creative skill set also makes it more fun. I think one thing that people worry about when they go into the management route is, I'm not going to get to be creative anymore.
Right. 100%.
Right. And that can be true if you let it be true, for sure. And I've had my own experience with being very focused, my nose to the grindstone, and, you know, like doing all the things I need to do to orchestrate on behalf of my team, and then sort of neglecting my own creative side. That's something I definitely work on with people that I work with. And I think that there's two things. One, there is a way to stay connected to your own creativity. And that looks different for different people. But if it's important to you when you move into management, then you want to honor that. But also, if you think of management as a creative activity, then I think it also helps to scratch that itch too.
That's really smart. It sounds like you did. I definitely had a place in my career where I was in a role, and it was a great role, and I did well at it. I have the numbers, and it just didn't fulfill me in the same way because it didn't have creativity in it. But I think, to your point, I think I didn't bring it in where it was, and I didn't recognize the areas. I think I was still thinking of, like, creativity needed to be in the execution side whereas when you think about it now, I think, I'm further. I'm removed. I have a very large team that does that, but like, I feed it in different ways. You say into how you approach management, into the sort of roles and exercises you set up for them. It's a really, really smart thing. And maybe you guys can all now avoid the mistake that we did.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. That's the pitfall. You can just call that the Rebecca pitfall that you have avoided. But it's true, right? I mean, you think creatively about how you can use those outlets, as it is for a lot of people. It's a superpower too, right? Not only can it fit the need selfishly, but it will make you the best manager you can be, because it is something, it is one of your strongest gifts. So leveraging that in whatever role you have, whatever those are, I think is important.
Yeah. And I also think I have a leadership model that I use with my coaching clients. And it's based on this idea that there are like four legs to the stool of leadership. One of them is energize. So it's like, how well are you taking care of your own energy and creating an environment where your team can take care of themselves? Influence, which is probably self-explanatory, but not just you being a good influencer, but you teaching your team how to be good influencers. Yep. Inspire is another piece of it. So having practices that help to cultivate your own creativity and also cultivate the creativity of your team, you know, and especially like making sure that you're not all work and no play. Mm-hmm. And that both you and your team need to be exposed to things outside of your domain and outside of your typical workday, because we sort of shrivel up. Like, our brains become more flexible and expand when we expose them to new things. It's really easy to get, you know, into habits and patterns. And then the last piece is unleash, which is about like unleashing the leadership in your team and empowering them and streamlining things so that they can focus on their zone of genius. Things like that. So all to say, creativity and inspiring both yourself and your team, I think, is just really important, especially for design leaders.
Well, it's the same kind of thing. Creativity, inspiration, leadership, those are characteristics that are can serve you very well in your career, no matter, again, what stage it is. It's not just when you've got to outwardly doing it. As designers, there's a lot of convincing is too strong a word, right? But like, it's part of getting people to think differently. It's part of getting, you know, engineers to think differently about the users at the end of the end. There's a lot of that. And you know what? It never works. We all know it doesn't work to be like, hey, that's wrong, this is right. But inspiring them to solve those problems in there is a, again, a good use of the skills going both directions.
Yeah. There's so much that you can be creative about too. Like, you can be inventive about the way that you approach your one-on-one conversations and how you design them, or project kickoffs, or the way that you debrief as a team after a project. Like, there are really rote, mundane ways to do those things. And then there are ways that can be much more compelling and, you know, activate the energy and excitement of other people too. So
absolutely. All right. So if we've got someone who's, you know, maybe been in the design world for a couple of years and is kind of thinking about next steps, we talked a little bit about the skills that they should build up no matter what their next step is. Is there ways that you would help them think about finding the right match for their next step, right? Like helping them figure out which path of those kind of four that we laid out might be the right one for them?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you will make better choices about your career if you know who you are and what matters most to you. So I always start there. Like, it's really important to have a good foundation in what your values are, what your purpose is, like what kind of impact you want to have. And those things can help you think about things like, as I did when I got into the design world, what are my environment must-haves? So, you know, I often do work in coaching with clients to get really clear about what their values are. Your values are like your must-haves. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, they're the things that matter most to you. And if they are not present, you will not be a vibrant, alive person at all. And a lot of times people haven't gone through the exercise of just getting clear about that. It's kind of a simple exercise, but it's really powerful to know, like, these are the five things I care most about.
Yep.
And you can use those to help yourself make decisions about where you go next, right? So if, you know, adventure is one of my values, and if I were to join an organization where it did not feel like that was something that was appreciated, I probably wouldn't do very well there.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one piece. And your purpose. So what kind of impact you want to make in the world. I think the environment piece is really important. I used to think earlier in my career that, you know, you can change organizations from the bottom up. And I even gave talks about that, you know, like, we could do it, guerrilla. And there's some truth to that,
yeah.
but not entirely, because you're never stronger than your environment, really, unless you're just a supreme human being. So, you know, being really honest with yourself about what you need in an environment to thrive, and then being selective if you can. Obviously, there are situations where people just need to work and they got to do what they got to do, and more power to you. And then when you can make a different choice later, you will. But so there's values, there's purpose, there's environment. I would say also, if you're assessing organizations, look at opportunity for growth. So, and I mean that in a couple of ways. So one would be, you know, is there a role after this role that I could grow into? And maybe that doesn't matter. If you're like, this is a 1-2 year stint in my career, it's early in my career, it's okay. But probably for a lot of people, it would matter because they'd like to maybe move into more than one role. And then also just if there are mechanisms in the organization to support you growing, like even if they don't have big budgets. I remember when I was at Adaptive Path, I grew so much there, and I didn't have a big budget to spend on, but I got to do lots of public speaking and I got to do a podcast and interview people in the field and share things that I was learning as I was learning it, because I was in this really creative environment that offered that type of value too, in terms of growing. So the growth piece, I think, is important. The other thing I would say is investigating who you will report to.
Mm. Yeah.
Who's the leader? Are they going to cultivate you or not? Now, there's a little asterisk. There's always the possibility they'll hire you and then 6 months later they go somewhere else. So that can't be the whole picture.
Right. Yes.
But yeah, like, you know, a good leader can do wonders for your career and your success inside of an organization. So that would be another piece too.
Yeah, a couple of those. I mean, I think all of those are true. I think, like you said, environment, yes, we can absolutely change our environment for good. We all fight the good fight. But the difference when I joined an organization where that environment already existed, I didn't realize how much of my energy and effort was on trying to build the environment. And when it already existed, it was just like, oh, like so much extra energy, so much friction's too strong a word, but like so much extra pressure was just gone. was like, well, of course you're going to do that. That's how it would work. And you're like, oh, right. Yes, I am. It was a big change. It was a good change.
And then you got to use all that energy for making things.
Right. Having you had all those other things that you could do. It was so much better.
Yeah.
Growth is another one I think is really good, because I think growing is really important. And to your point, it can be a little difficult to suss out, because growth doesn't always mean there's a clear career path. Like especially if you're in a smaller mid-sized organization, they may not have that kind of structure.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, one of the places I've grown the most is when I've been able to kind of grow out, right? Where you're doing a lot of different things. Your sort of sphere of influence gets bigger. Your domain, your control, like decision-making power, all of those things, I think are where a lot of the growth opportunity comes in. They are a little bit harder to identify on the outside.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's true. That's fair. That's totally fair. And I think you're sort of pointing at something else that I think is good to watch out for or to look for in smaller organizations, if that's where you decide to aim. It's just like how entrepreneurial you can be. That's another way you get to grow is in some organizations you can create, and there's not a lot of hierarchy to go through in order to do that. And that is very high value, especially earlier in your career. Well, I mean, I think for different folks at different points in their career, I have really thrived in environments where I've been able to be entrepreneurial. But you're right, that's a little tricky. I have to think about, like, what's the really good interview question to get at that?
You know, an entrepreneur is a really good way of putting it to, a lot of times people are like, they think of that as, I like autonomy, or I hate to be micromanaged, which like is totally true for everybody. Yeah. But asking that question or thing is like an always weird one. But I think the flip side of that is, does the organization embrace an entrepreneurial spirit, right?
Yeah.
Trying things, is okay if some of them fail. Are we okay to be out here? I think that's a really good mindset to kind of move away from the negative places, and maybe an area you can explore in the questions to get an answer that is more. You could even ask for an example of a time that kind of spirit's been embraced. I think that could perhaps give us a little bit more insight.
Well, and actually, I was just having a conversation with someone who works in a really large organization, and they're pretty high up, and they were telling me that you wouldn't know it from the outside, but you can be extraordinarily entrepreneurial inside.
Oh, nice.
So I don't think it's always relegated just to smaller organizations.
Yep. Very true.
Right? That's interesting.
So one other thing I was going to throw out is something that one of my coaches gave me the advice is, like, you don't have to decide what you want to be when you grow up. You just have to decide what you want to do next.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think sometimes there's like a lot of pressure and be like, down 20 years down the road, what if I don't do that? No, I think it's really valid to be like, okay, what's the right next for this time in my life, for where I am and what I'm interested in? And I think it's the accumulations of all of those that eventually give us wherever we go. But I think sometimes we put unnecessary pressure on ourselves to be like, this is the final decision of what I'm going to do and be. It's like, well, I'm new now. So
yeah, I agree with that. And even like, as we were talking about environment, I would say the asterisk to that that part of the conversation is, and no environment is perfect.
No. Right? No.
And I definitely am someone who for myself and also for my clients, I bias towards action for sure.
Yeah.
Because you can't think your way out of a lot of things. There are most things you have to actually be in action to really assess.
Yes.
And you know, luckily we live in a time and place where if you decide to stay someplace for 6 months or a year, it's not going to be the end of the world. Especially if you live in California, where I used to live.
People moving all the time.
Yeah, they're moving all over the place.
It's true. It is different. When I first entered, it was like a big, it's a big black mark if you'd moved around a lot.
Yeah. That's really not the case anymore.
No.
Unless you do it a lot, but.
Right. And then you just start to be like, well, yeah. So there's a balance. And it's certainly not worth staying in a bad one for one little, for a thing. But, and environments is another place where the environments I had when I first entered the job force, not only would you not always recognize the right environment, but you don't always need the same environment as you grow, right? Mm-hmm. And as you change things, as just even different things are on in your life. If you have different chapters in your life and your personal life, the environment that is right for you at that time is going to shift. So it's an important factor, but it is one that you, like, again, it will evolve and change as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, you know, the coaching tools that I use to help people when they're in this situation are really just about helping them get clearer about themselves so that they can make better decisions, you know, and sometimes you just have to do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's just time.
But you make better decisions when you know, otherwise, what's your criteria? Money? Which if you're a certain kind of person will be enough. I know people that's enough, but for a lot of people, especially in the design world, yeah. we're I think motivated by other things. That's not gonna hold you. So it's a way of like creating some criteria to make a good decision.
Yeah. And I think it's, those are the ones that sustain. Even I don't know, I'm sure there's some, but I can't think of a lot of people where money really is going to be enough long-term, even if it sounds super exciting from where you are. But I also think it's interesting, like the two parts of the conversation we've had. So these are the things you should consider about where you want to go next. Some of the other things we talked about, right? Leadership skills, business understanding, all of those are really important to continually to build now, because they're going to help enable you to select where you want to go next and not just be reactive because you don't have those options. So as you're figuring those things out, there are still some core skills in the design space as a designer that we can really build up to make us really succeed at whatever path it is that we go down in whatever type of environment.
Yeah. And I would add, I was thinking about something as you were talking that, you know, the piece around pick your leader, you know?
Yeah.
It's if you have the opportunity to work for someone who is a really good leader and you're interested in leadership skills and management, I mean, that is priceless. There are good leaders out there. There are not so good leaders out there.
Yeah.
And if you have a chance to learn from someone and you're watching them in action and who you think, you know, if they're a good leader, they're going to do this. They're going to be thinking about your good and the collective good, not just their own path.
Yep.
Then that's a really compelling reason to go someplace.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I can think through all the different leaders I've had, and I've had some great ones. I've had a couple that weren't as, but all of them I learned things from and things that together we've, right? Because just like being you've got to be an authentic leader. So I've had very good leaders who are very different than me in ways. And there are things that I learned from them and I use, but me trying to mimic them or mime them would make me an ineffective leader.
Right.
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 I need to let the creativity out. I need to do some of those other things.
Yeah. I'm a big proponent and believer in authentic leadership.
Yes.
And I think women maybe a little more in the past, but I think there's still some of this, maybe have a little bit of a harder time. Sometimes there's this idea of like modeling, like what kind of leadership is going to work in this environment. Right. And the dominant leadership style historically has been a more masculine leadership style. And so, you know, especially when I'm working with women, it's like trying to find that. I think to your point, like you'll never be as good as people that you're trying to mimic.
Right.
Right. Yep. And if you can, you know, figure out what your strengths are and really come from that place, you're much more likely to be powerful, persuasive. And of course, I do think it's important to expand your leadership range and to learn how to show up in ways that may be less comfortable or less natural, because sometimes the situation calls for it.
Or managing the people who are least like you, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe not just like you, but where there are certain, for me, maybe it's just me, but there are certain personality types that are the easiest thing in the world for me to manage. I totally get where they're thinking. There's a lot of the others. And then there are a couple that are much harder for me. I have to be a much more conscientious leader. I have to be much more diligent about things because it doesn't necessarily fit with my natural. And it took me a little while to realize like there's nothing wrong with them. My frustration is just because I've been using, I can use crutches with other people, right? Like I can do shortcuts that are not necessarily the healthiest shortcuts, but these works, but that's not a weakness. And they bring a really different perspective that's important, but I have to be much more attentive on those managers.
Well, and because first of all, we always bias towards people that are like us.
Yeah.
That's the human thing. And we know that we're better for it when we have diverse voices and cognitive, you know, like approaches in the room for sure. And, you know, sometimes too, you inherit people onto your team, or you need people who are not people that you naturally would get along with. Yep. And you still have to have a relationship. And you need it to be as good of a relationship as you can. And those are definitely leadership moments, right?
Yes. Like,
how do I cultivate a relationship that wouldn't be one I would go toward naturally, but is actually important, you know, for this project or the context that I'm in?
Excellent. Yes. Okay. We talked about a lot of different things today. Teresa, it was delightful. If you could get our listeners to do two things differently tomorrow, based on what we talked about today, what would you have them do?
So first I would say, if you are not clear about your personal values, do some research to learn about them and how to use them, because it's a really, really simple thing, but it gets you back to the core of what matters to you. And coming from there, you'll always make better decisions. So that's one. The other would be, if you aren't already learning about business strategy and you're in the design world, start doing it. Start learning business acumen, business strategy, like that bigger picture of, it's basically the way that all your business partners and stakeholders are thinking. So, you know, start working on that piece too, because it's basically you will be learning the language of people that are very important for you to be able to communicate with.
And to be able to translate your work and your impact in that language, I think super powerful. Great suggestions, Teresa. Great conversation. Really appreciate your time and sharing all your perspectives here on Design Chat.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening. That does it for this week's episode of Design Chats. Join us next time. And in the meantime, if you're looking to contribute strategically, drive value, and build influence in your design organization, don't forget to explore at pragmaticinstitute.com/design.